Welcome to Kicking It Local, the podcast all about the football community in South Australia. It's another year, another great year, 2024, the third season of Kicking It Local. Macron Sports Hub Adelaide are ready to provide your club, academy or organisation with all its teamwear needs. For inquiries or online shopping, head to macronstoreadelaide.com.au. I'm your host, Johnny Kecko, and we're ready for another huge season of football and a huge season of the podcast. And looking forward to all the stories to be shared this year. And, well, the first episode, we got a lot of stories to get through. And it's going to be across a few parts because there's too many to talk about in a half an hour episode. And I am joined by someone who is very well known in the local game from her time as Full On Football host. Most of you will know her as Nat Adamopoulos. But I'm joined today by Nat Harrison. It's a pleasure to have you on the first episode for 2024.
It's so nice to be here because you remind me of myself when I first started with so much passion and so much vibrance. It's just a pleasure to be here.
Oh, thank you so much. That means a lot. I've remember watching bits of Full On Football as a kid and I was always like, I love when I was getting into the game back then because I got into the game when I was 11 years old. So back in 2005. So when I was the early days, the Full On Football was just going on. So I remember watching bits and pieces when I was trying to understand the game back then. It's amazing now that it's I've got you on my first podcast for season three and also on the first episode of The Local Game, my new TV show as well. It's incredible, like a full circle. I want to talk about, now that I'm doing these shows and that, I want to talk about your stories because I think it's exciting to hear what you went through back then because it's totally different, isn't it?
Absolutely. As I was saying to you before, you can go to a game, you've got your smartphone, you can line it up, a guy's taking a penalty or you can see a play forming and they're coming forward and then the goals, you know, ball goes in the back of the net and then bang, you could put it straight onto social media. And we did not have that back in the day because there was no social media. It was very, very early in the day. And, you know, we didn't have smartphones. Everything was done the long way.
Yeah.
Long way.
How do you find it to try and do what you did? Like, you had the TV show that you record every Wednesday, but you didn't have the footage like we do. We can jump onto onto YouTube and edit what the Federation's already broadcast. You had none of that back then. How do you find it that though and jump those hurdles to do it?
It was very frustrating because I had to do basically everything myself to be able to get things out there so people could see. The Federation or the governing body was not doing any work like that at all. And in actual fact, just getting scores up, results up, they a lot of times were not up until Tuesdays or Wednesday. And for me, preparing the show, that was way too late. I needed them very, very early. So I guess the first thing that I initiated was a text messaging system. So what I did prior to starting the show is I sent a letter out to all the clubs introducing myself and what the show's objective was, and also a form. And on that form, it was asking them to nominate two people from the club that I could immediately contact for scores.
Yep.
And so we got that all together, put into my phone. And so then at the end of the game, I would then send out texts, please send in the results of your game. And at the end of the day, it would go back and forth a few times, be about 250 text messages that were sent out. I had to change my plan on my phone because I ran out of that within about 2 weeks. And then what the good thing was, it was good for everyone because we had teams that were sitting in change rooms and they were getting the results and they were going, look, we've gone up. We're top of the ladder now because, you know, Western Strikers lost and now we're top of the ladder or whatever it was. So it was good for everybody all round. And then footage was I used to film the games myself and then have to – so they were on cameras. I had to take them home, upload them into my my video recorder, and that was in real time. Because it wasn't just a video file, it was had to play in real time to record in real time. And so I would sit there and I'd take highlights, you know, what happened at what minute and whatever. And then from the video recorder, I would then transfer it onto a DVD.
Yeah.
And then from there, cut out, then I would upload it into a computer, into a video editing package.
Yep.
And then I would cut it down to about maybe 1.5, 2 minutes of footage. Wow. And then give that to the studio. So let's say you and I were talking about a game.
Yep.
We could watch it through the monitors as we were talking.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Lots and lots of work.
Yeah. Now it's totally different. I'm recording it on my camcorders and then take the SD card and put it straight into the laptop and it's ready to go.
Mm.
And with AI, which I'm not using at this stage, you can easily put it through and then they'll cut up videos and clips for you. Which is incredible, right. Isn't it?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, no, we had to do that. The good thing was, look, I felt very privileged doing this because I would watch it in real time 2 or 3 times because obviously I'm watching it in real time to record it onto the recorder and then I'm watching it in real time where I'm recording it from video file into my my video editing package.
Yep.
And so I felt privileged because I got to know a lot about the strengths and weaknesses of players.
Yep.
So, for instance, I could say to Dan Godley, I know how to beat you in goals because I've seen where your weakness is. Or I could see, I mean, one time all I did was watch Damien Murray.
Yeah.
All I did, I didn't really watch the game, I watched Damien Murray. And the guy was where he placed himself. He knew where the goal was, didn't even have to look at the goal to score, but where he was placing himself to accept the ball was amazing. And so when you're able to watch this footage of people over and over again, you feel like, oh, I feel like I'm the most luckiest person in South Australia because I'm watching all of this taking place and I know what these players can do. And in actual fact, also had coaches asking me for footage of players and all that because they might be interested in bringing a young fella down to the club and they wanted to know how he played. So
yeah.
I had a lot of requests from coaches as well.
So they were using it to scout players as well?
Scout players, and then if they were coming up in a cup game against somebody that they normally wouldn't play,
yeah,
they might be playing someone from a different league. Have you got any footage about them? Yes, I do. So then they would buy the game and then they would study it and have a look how they can beat them.
So you pretty much changed the landscape of football in South Australia in some sense because they're having access to footage that they didn't have before and that kind of helped the coaches.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah. Look, some players took advantage of them and bought a lot of games and constructed themselves player profiles to get contracts overseas,
yep,
which a number of them did. So yeah, it was really important. And then some clubs used it as an analysis as well. So they would then look at it the next week, get the game, look at the and analyze what they did. Especially if they had a bad game, they could analyze their mistakes on the footage.
Wow, that's incredible. How many games do you reckon you've got
now? Oh my goodness. I was saying before that at one stage we had games. So we had Friday night at Modbury Jets.
Yep.
Then we had Saturday games. Then we had Saturday night games. Then we had some Sunday games that perhaps like Metro Stars would have. And then we'd had Monday night at Adelaide City. And so in one of the years, the last year that I did it, I was filming every one of those games. So 5 games on a weekend plus the Monday. So it was ridiculous. So I think I've got around about close to 300 games. And as I said before, wow, some of them have not seen the light of day because I've recorded them, might have done highlights, but that's about it. I've got one game that I would really like to pull out of the library, and that's South Australia versus Western Australia with all our top players back then. South Australia won, and it was such an amazing game. It was played down at Blue Eagles Stadium. But it was such an amazing game, so I really have to get that out and put it up on YouTube.
Yeah, that would be awesome to see. Mm. I know, well, Mark Talbot was on episode 1 of The Local Game with us,
mm-hmm,
and he was talking about, like, for the last couple of years since I've known him, he's always talked about the highlights of when he played. It was only the game that you filmed. So he would show, like, little snippets that he had on his phone, and that's cool that you – that essentially if you didn't do that, these players that played back then wouldn't have had – anything to look back on.
Yeah, and I did it with my own daughter. She played for West Adelaide. She had 1 year at Adelaide United, but unfortunately she got a bad injury. And so she really, that was the end of her career with Adelaide United. But we did, I did a reel on all of her stuff, that all the games that she played, and yeah. she managed to get a contract with South Melbourne. So that was amazing, because the year that she went over, the women, they won the championship.
Yeah. Wow.
It was just so exciting. And the games there, the standard there was a lot better than yeah. standard in South Australia. So it was good to see, actually.
Well, we're talking about the show as well. You did all that, and that was just to add highlights to your actual show. So that's more recording you have to do as well on Wednesdays. How was that? And you know what? Let's take a step even further back. How did that start up, and what did you have to do to get the show running?
Okay. Don't forget, I also worked full time, and yep. I had three little toddlers. I had like a 5, 6, and a 7-year-old
wow.
at the same time. So hence why the name Full On.
Yeah.
Because people used to say to me, when I was trying to think of a name, I was trying to think of SA or Adelaide or something that was local.
Yeah.
And then people used to say to me, oh my gosh, you're so full on. You're so full on. You know, you're here 5 days a week. You're here doing this. And they used to say that all the time. And so I thought, Full On Football. Because when I started the show, the name football was asked to be used by the governing body. So they changed from soccer
yep.
to football.
Yeah.
Prior to that, it was all soccer.
Yeah.
So I guess how doing the show started was in 2004, I was part of a show with Dom Ronaldo, John Cosmina and Albie Kidd called The Adelaide Soccer Show. And that was on Channel 31, which is now Channel 44, the community yep. station. I only did 1 year of it because that was when the NSL was finishing up. Adelaide United came in, and so Dom was the media manager yeah. and John Cosmina was the coach. So they said, well, we're not doing this anymore. We're going to be concentrating with Adelaide United. So then obviously there was about an 18-month hiatus before the A-League started. And that's when I went, okay, I'm going to do a show. So I thought, I'm only going to do local, because Adelaide Soccer Show did local, national, and then they did English Premier League, Spanish League and Italian League, Serie A.
Yep.
So I thought, there's SBS and Channel 2 that does all that sort of stuff. I'm not going to do that. I'm not expertise enough for that. I'm going to do the local game like you do.
Yep.
So concentrate on the local game, because I wanted kids to know the local players before they became famous and they were playing for Socceroos.
Yeah.
So by the time they went to the Socceroos, they already had a following.
Yeah.
That was the whole objective of the
That's
show.
Brilliant. Yeah. You know? Well, looking at you, we'll talk about it a bit later, but you've got the whole list of every guest you've had on your show. The whole time you had Full On Football, some of the names you got on there. And you're telling me Jordan Elsie, 12-year-old, on your show. You had Ryan McGowan on your show,
yep.
all these players and a whole lot more as well that have gone on to play overseas or for the Socceroos
yep.
were there as young kids as well. It's incredible.
Absolutely. Jordan Elsie came on. They had just played the SAPSASA competition, the school soccer competition, and he ended up being the captain of South Australia, so the team that they choose yep. from all the kids that are playing. And he was on our show. He was a 12-year-old boy. Very, very talented 12-year-old yeah. boy as well back then. And it was amazing. His little interview that we did, yeah, he was really professional. And then you go, hey, he was on our show, and then he's playing for Adelaide United.
Yeah.
So, it's brilliant to see how these kids, you know, grow and develop.
Yeah, yeah, Craig Goodwin as well is another big one.
Definitely.
He was a lot shy back then.
Yeah, it's really funny because I knew Craig from a long time ago and his dad, and the first time he was on the show, he was a bit of like a deer in headlights type of situation, very nervous, couldn't answer in a lot of words, just one or two words. And I also had Barney Smith with me that was on the show, on that same show, and he was really good because he helped Craig feel a bit more comfortable.
Yep.
And so he was saying, oh, how did you feel, Craig, when you did this and when you got that and you scored your first goal? And so he sort of came out of his shell a little bit. But, yeah, he was very, very nervous. And his dad, I've got to have a joke that his dad often texts me when Craig has been interviewed by someone from the, you know, playing for the Socceroos, and his dad will say, who would have thought that Full On Football gave Craig his media training, right?
Yeah.
And so it's always an in-house joke. So Yeah, it's good. Look, the majority of the time, 99% of the time, people were really great and were able to talk freely. But then there were the small little times where people were very nervous and couldn't find the words to talk. So you just have to try and make them feel comfortable.
Exactly. And it's not an easy thing, but depending on your personality as well.
Yeah.
I love it. Like I've noticed that some people are a bit uncomfortable, but by the end of it, it's a relaxing chat. And I was speaking to some other players, someone like Joe Gauci. He loves being in front of the media, but some of the younger boys, they don't have that media training yet, but you watch how they grow. And he was saying how for him, as he's a Socceroo now, and now he's in the EPL, but he was saying how the local radio stations when he was in the NPL, they helped him get that media training. Your show would have done exactly the same back then, and it's amazing to have those things that help those players build them. And how proud are you seeing Craig Goodwin now?
Ugh.
Talking in front of media on his way back from the World Cup and all that, those scenarios.
Look, all of us that knew Craig, that saw him play from when he was 8 years old, we always knew this kid's got it.
Yep.
And he had to do it the hard way to break into everywhere because he always was, oh, you're too skinny, you're too lanky, you're not fit, you know, you don't have enough meat on you, let's wait a few years, all that sort of thing. So he really had to work hard. And I'll tell you, that he was part of an academy called EFI, the European Football Academy.
Yeah.
And I was there when he was training. And so we used to come out on Sundays and train. He used to be there before everybody got there. One day it was pouring with rain and he used to spend 3 hours shooting at goals. 3 hours. And then they used to train at Croatia Raiders ground, and the groundsman, the guy that was looking after everybody, say, Craig, I'm switching off the lights now. And the lights would go off and he'd still be banging away trying to get the goals. So he really worked hard to better his game. And so we could see that once there were that little bit of breaking through. And he had to move away from Adelaide. He had to go and play, he played for Hearts, he played for Newcastle. So he had to go away to then come back because – and then, of course, when he played for Newcastle, that's when the Socceroos coach, he spotted him and he went,
yeah,
I like him. He really likes Craig.
Yeah, he had to move to Melbourne and work at KFC as well.
Yeah.
Just to get a break over there.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's funny, when he was supposed to be getting a contract for the juniors in Scotland, he was supposed to be leaving, and it was a Scottish team. I think they were called the Hibernians, or I'm not sure of the name. I keep forgetting the name. It was a long time ago now. But we were having a going away party for him at his mum and dad's. And it was the last game of the Scottish League for this club, and the club had to just draw to stay in the league, and they lost. So that means they were being relegated. And he got a phone call that night, and the guy said, I'm sorry, we can't have you up here because they're scrapping the junior development to save money. And so there he was, a guy. The next day he was going to be getting on the plane, and now that was all over. And so he had to try again. And then that's when he ended up going to Victoria. He played in the Victorian Premier League, and Joe Mullen was there, so he saw him as well. So, look, he did a lot of hard work to where he is now, and we're just loving it. We're so happy for him.
He's come a long way. It's good. And you captured that early stage on your show as well. I love the stories that we're talking off air about and looking at the guests you had on. For me, I want to talk about what your favourites are, but I also want to mention some of my ones that I saw on it I liked as well. The John Aloisi chat you had as well, you got to interview him. What was that like? Because he did tell you about the Uruguayan penalty kicks as well.
Yeah.
What was that conversation like with him?
That was amazing. So he was coming back to South Australia, and, of course, him and his dad and his brother Ross, they had the tiling company down at Paraka. So they were coming back and they were going to be doing some guest spots with people being able to see him and that. And so I asked, can I do an interview with him? And, of course, Ross already knew what I did with the show, and so they were able to give us some time. I think it was around about half an hour that we did. And so we obviously I made sure that I got my research right on him. So he had played in the Spanish league. He was playing for Osasuna. And while he was there, the Spanish league had a lot of issues with paying players, and that club did not pay their players for nearly 12 months.
Wow.
And when I said that to him, "You were playing and you didn't get paid," and he went to me, "How did you know that?" And how I knew it was I remember reading about it in a book about what he had gone through, and it was tough because they weren't getting paid.
Mm.
And so anyway, that sort of got better, and they ended up going to court. So players took them to court and they ended up getting all their money that they were owed. But when Australia was playing Uruguay to get into the World Cup in that 2006 match, a lot of the guys that were in Uruguay, John had played with in Osasuna, so he knew how they took the penalties. So he was able to tell Mark Schwarzer, "Oh, this guy here, when he comes up, he's going to look like he's kicking right, but he's going to kick left. He does it every time.
Yep.
This guy here, he kicks it high and tries to get into the corner of the net. This guy here, he'll kick it along the ground and try and get it past your hand, right, goes really wide." And he told that to Mark Schwarzer. So Mark Schwarzer already had an idea of how these guys took the penalties.
Yeah.
So I'm not taking away any talent from Mark Schwarzer, because he was amazing in that penalty shootout. But he already had that intel to know, okay, this guy does this, I'm going to go this way. So, yeah, John was very gracious, and it was just – and then also taking him back to the moment of when he took that penalty kick. So asking him, what were you thinking? How were you going to take it? How were you going to do it? And so he was telling us step by step as the footage was going how he was feeling. And when it went in the back of the net, he just said, "I went crazy." And I knew where my dad was and where my family was, and I went right over there to say, "Hey, we've got into the World Cup." So how amazing. Brilliant. To have that on your shoulders. You got the country to go into the World Cup.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, I still remember those moments, and I still get shivers just thinking about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, imagine talking to the guy and asking him, "How do you feel at that moment? What was going through your head?"
Mm.
And he just said, "I was just going to kick it. That's it. I'm just going to kick it." So, and he said, "I dreamt of this all this time, every time, kicking this ball."
Yeah.
So it was really good. It was really good.
And you also got to speak to Schwarzer as well. That's a big one to pull off. How did you manage to get that?
Oh, that was really a right place in the right time type of thing, because Mark Schwarzer had written these soccer books called Megs, and they were books to make kids feel comfortable. So kids that were being teased or something like that. So they were these really easy reading books for kids from about 7 to 12 years old. So he was launching these books, and he was doing it here in South Australia with his publicists. So it was the guy that co-wrote them with him.
Yeah, okay.
And so Dimitri Pepis was at FFSA at then, and he said to me, "Look, Schwarzer is going to be in Adelaide for 3 days, so he's doing some coaching clinics, blah, blah, blah. Do you want to interview him?" And I said, "Yes, I do." And he said, "Okay, I'll see if I can get some time." And they were at Underdale High School, so they had a whole day of like coaching clinic and stuff like that. And then they all went into the hall, and so he was launching his books, blah, blah, blah. And then that's where we got to interview him. So it was about 15, 20 minutes that we got with him.
That's brilliant.
But it was amazing, and it was so good. We spoke to him and the other guy, and the other guy said to me the questions that I was asking, he said, "God, you should come round with us, because you're asking awesome questions about these books." Because obviously I read the book as well to make sure that I knew what that book was all about. And it was all about including kids into a team.
Yep.
Don't leave them sitting on the bench in the change room. Bring them in and make sure that they feel like they're part of a team.
What was he like as a person?
Oh, lovely. So, so nice. Really giving of his time, really charming. And he made me feel like I was important. So that's when people have got that talent and skill to make you feel really important, like you are an important person, that makes you feel really good. And so therefore you produce a better quality of interview.
Yeah. You feel more comfortable and, yeah.
Are you still nervous? But you do feel comfortable. And, see, that was part of the Keepers show that we did.
Yeah.
So we had all Keepers on for that show and he was part of it. So the footage that we took, he was part of it.
What's one of your favourite moments during the show? Because I know there's a lot because we did speak off air about it and you went through every episode of all the guests you had. But does this one thing stand out?
Oh, look. It's hard to pinpoint and just say one thing. Probably the last show was a bittersweet show. It was great. I got to 100 shows. I believe there's no local TV soccer or football show that has ever done 100 episodes still to this day. But having Raleigh Rasich on as your guest and I had Donald Campbell and Ben Dale. And why I chose those two is that they were co-hosts of mine quite regularly and they were really good value because they knew all the leagues, so you were able to talk to them about anything. But having him on was just amazing. He was like, when you talk to Raleigh, if he rings you, be prepared to be on the phone for 1.5 hours. I mean, obviously when he was alive. So he would ring me quite often and we would start talking about something and he'd tell me stories, about this, that. Oh, you know, when this guy became the coach of New Zealand and how did they get into the World Cup? And, you know, we had this barbecue with Lev Scheinflug and Frank Arok and me and we were all there telling him what to do. So all these stories that he has, talking about the 74 World Cup where you've got guys that are not professionals – they've all got jobs and they're playing they play with their hearts on their sleeves, you know. So that was amazing. That was a really special show. But there were others where I had a referee show where we had all different referees on, Matthew Cream included. We had a keepers show where we had Ben Moore, Dan Godley, Leah Trimboli and Frank Andrucci, and that was one of the funniest shows I've ever done because we started talking about gloves and we got into a spot where it was like, oh, my goodness, there's so many different types of gloves and they're, you know, all different makes, all different sizes, all different protection, and it was hilarious. And, of course, as you know, Ben Moore, Dan Godley, they are just such funny people. And Leah Trimboli, she was an ex-Matildas keeper.
Yeah.
So having her on as well and her telling her story of when she was with Matildas was amazing. And then I have to say another show that we did that Michael Brooks and I did was we spent a day with the Matildas when the Asian Cup was on here back in 2006 and the Women's Asian Cup.
Yeah.
And we spent a day with the Matildas. So it was like whatever you want to do because no one ever promoted them.
Mm.
So we were in the change room. We were in their operation room.
Wow.
We had an interview with the equipment manager telling us all about the equipment. We go into another room. There's a guy giving a massage to a girl because she's done a hammy. And so he's talking about the sort of things that he does with the girls and the, you know, what sort of treatment he gives. It was brilliant. And obviously we talked to the Matildas as well. In their hotel rooms and that, it was like we had to pinch ourselves. Brooksy was saying, I'm here with the Matildas. I'm there, I know. How did we get this one? So, again, it's just like I said to yourself, you've got to go out there and grab it and grab that opportunity because it will never come twice. So,
definitely.
Yeah.
I just want to go back to the Raleigh Rasich interview. You were talking about how you got to interview him on your show. Before we even started, you brought a bag of goodies and you've got the jersey, 1974 jersey sign as well.
Yes. So back in 1974 when they had obviously the equipment for the team and you have a X amount of players, so it might be 18 players, 20 players, whatever it was back then. So there were two sets of uniforms left over where no one wore them. No, they were never used. And so my father was able to acquire one of those. So it was the actual jersey, the green satin shorts and the white socks with the green and gold hoops at the top.
Yep.
So no one's ever worn them And Rally was able to sign that for me as the coach of the Socceroos for 74.
I was just looking at it and comparing the jerseys from back then to now. That's 50 years ago now.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And just looking at it and like, wow, they're almost like the basketball shirts we used to have at school.
Like the holy mesh type of thing. Yeah. And the pants, the shorts are just satin shorts and they're not stretchy. They're tiny. I mean, we were looking at them the other day and I said, what can you hold in the middle there? Not much, because it would be on it. And then my husband said, oh, they wore jock straps and things like that. So it wouldn't sort of come out anywhere. So, yeah, it's just for me, that's one of my prized possessions. I've got another shirt that Rally also gifted to me, which is a German – it's a German shirt which is – it says Hart zum Ball, which is the hearts on the ball, and that's all about football as well. So but I have to tell you a story about when he came here to do that show. So how I managed to get him was – I saw in the paper that he was coming over to Adelaide to speak to a home building company, that he had a friend that was the owner of a home building company. So I'm there, oh, look at the time he's going to be here. It's going to coincide with the 100th show for Full On Football. Oh. So I'm there, oh, how am I going to get to ask him? And so in the end, I contacted a president from Adelaide City, and he, because obviously he was coach there at some stage, and I said to him, have you got the number of Raleigh Rasic? I want to call him. And he said, yeah, I do. And I said, if you want to call him and let him know that you're going to give it to me. And he said, no, he'll be fine, because Raleigh knew my father.
Yep.
My father and Raleigh locked horns quite a bit, because Raleigh wanted to do things his way, and my father, because he was the chairman of the South Australian Soccer Federation, would say, no, Raleigh, you have to follow the rules, right? You can't just do it your way. And so anyway, I contacted him and I asked him, would he be willing to come on the show and be part of the show for the 100th show? And he straight away said yes. So he said, all right, I'm coming. So we were recording Wednesday. He said, I'm coming Tuesday. I've got to be Tuesday, I'm busy. And Wednesday morning I'm busy, but then Wednesday afternoon, yes, I can come and do it. But you need to come and pick me up, because I don't have a car. So I had to go and pick him up. So I'm picking him up, we're driving to the studio, and it's like I'm sitting in the car going, oh, my God, look who I've got in the passenger side next to me. And we're just chatting like we're friends.
Yeah.
He did the show. Then after the show, the people that were on the show, we all went out for dinner and had a dinner at one of the it was a sponsor for a different person that was on the show. So we went to that restaurant down at Glenelg. And then, of course, we had to drive him home. So I was driving him home, because I drove him to the show and I had another person with me. So we're driving, and he was staying on a hotel at the beginning of North Terrace near the Newmarket Hotel.
Yep.
So we're talking blah, 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 all the way, that from Glenelg to the city.
Wow.
We stop. So it was about 1 o'clock, I reckon, now.
Yep.
And then we were talking. And it's like 4 o'clock in the morning and we're still sitting in the car talking.
What time was the recording starting? That was
We'd already done that.
What time did that start though?
4 o'clock in the afternoon.
So 12 hours.
Yeah. And we're still talking. And then I could see how tired he was. And I said, Raleigh, we really need to stop and you need to get some rest, because the next day he was flying home. So anyway, I say to him, so how are you getting to the airport tomorrow? Oh, I don't know, I'll just probably catch a cab. And I said, no, I'll come and pick you up. So I came and picked him up, and we went all the way to the airport talking about football, he talked about his family, you know, personal things.
Yeah.
When I'm there, oh, wow, look what he's telling me, right? Mm. And we get the funniest thing happen. We get to the airport and we're sitting there waiting for his flight back to Sydney, and there's a little boy and his dad sitting opposite us.
Yep.
Right? And the boy's pointing and that, and I'm there, oh, I'm there to Rally. I'm there, I think that little boy wants your autograph. And the little boy comes up to me and says, hello, are you Nat from Full On Football? Can I have your autograph, please? And I'm there, what is going on?
Oh, that's brilliant.
I'm there, do you know who I'm sitting next to? And the dad's there, oh, yeah. And so dad got autograph and.
Son got your autograph and dad got Raleigh's autograph.
And then Raleigh turned around to me and he said, see, you're doing something that people love.
Yep.
You're doing the right thing. And I'm there, oh, like he's leaving and he says that to me.
Yeah.
How amazing is that? So I really cherish that.
Yeah.
That was like, you know, 24 hours of unbelievable stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. You could never even imagine it and you could not put a value on it.
That's all for part one of my chat with Nat Harrison. Keep an eye out for part two, out soon. Sadly, that's the end of the latest episode of Kicking the Local. But still want your weekly football fix? Well, tune in to The Local Game, a new show on Kekko Media YouTube, premiering Thursdays at 6 p.m. with replays on Channel 44 each Friday night. For more local stories, don't miss an episode of Kicking It Local. Subscribe on Spotify now.